anytime you're talking to more than two people, you're talking to an audience, and you have no idea who your ideal clients are until they learn more about you. So for me, I think one of the key and most critical components is knowing who you are at your core and ultimately knowing what your story is.
How do you grow and scale your business while avoiding entrepreneur poverty? Hi, I'm Buzz, and I've spent over 20 years marketing for entrepreneurs just like you. I've learned there's no one secret to success, but a series of strategies to help business owners scale at will. On this podcast, we uncover invaluable insights that successful entrepreneurs and industry experts use to profitably scale businesses. Welcome to You Are Buzzworthy. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of You Are Buzzworthy podcast. Today we are going to be talking about the power of getting your message in front of the people who needed to hear it the most. That's right, your perfect prospects. Joining me in today's conversation is Tyler Foley, who has been a professional performer on film, stage, and television since he was 6 years old. You might have seen him in films like Freddy vs. Jason, Door to Door, Carrie, or maybe the musical Ragtime. Tyler is passionate about helping others confidently take the stage and impact an audience with their stories. He is currently the managing director of Total Buy-In and the number one best-selling author of The Power to Speak Naked. Ooh, I feel a little dirty saying that. Tyler, welcome to the You Are Buzzworthy podcast.
Oh, Buzz, it's a joy and a pleasure to be here. I just love every time you and I get to chat, so I've been looking forward to this.
Awesome. Yes, I know. It's our calendars. It almost seems like I almost feel like an E-level celebrity. If anybody doesn't know what that means, like there's A-level celebrities like, you know, big names now.
Tom Cruise.
The Rock.
Tom Cruise is still A-level, The Rock.
There you go.
And then so B-level, and are you ready?
Yeah.
Because The Rock will appreciate this, but Kevin Hart won't. B-level celebrity would be Kevin Hart.
Okay. Then who is a C-level?
Pick anybody on any one of the CSIs.
Okay. Perfect. Now, I am not just below that. I'm the next one below that. That's how I look at it. Yeah. Right? I'm an E-level. And the fact that I have a calendar that I actually have to manage at E-level, I cannot imagine what guys like Dwayne Johnson have to go through day to day. Like they must have
a ton of assistants.
Exactly. So I wanted to bring you on because you are a master of helping people get their message in front of the right audience. And when I talk to entrepreneurs, one major mistake I see a lot is a failure to get their message to their audience. And some people automatically think that means getting on stages or launching webinars, all that crazy stuff, being influencers, whatnot. What do you tell people who have this misconception?
Well, first of all, anytime you're talking to more than two people, you're talking to an audience, and you have no idea who your ideal clients are until they learn more about you. So for me, I think one of the key and most critical components is knowing who you are at your core and ultimately knowing what your story is. And your story is not just one thing. There are a series of events that have led you to where you are now. Knowing what those key points are and being able to tell them effectively is how you will get to your audience. Often one of the things that I like to say is that the thing you're afraid to say is what your ideal audience needs to hear. So knowing who you are at your core, and as Les Brown says, never making a point without a story and never telling a story without a point is going to be critical to finding that ideal audience and being able to communicate with them effectively.
So what do you mean when we talk about our ideal audience? That's such an easy thing to say, right? So how do we find who our ideal audience is?
Well, if you're not sure, because that's, you know, a lot of people when they're starting out in business or when they're starting out doing anything and they're like, I don't know who needs to hear this message. One of the tools that I have used to determine that is twofold. There are two things that you can do. The first is, who were you 5 to 10 years ago? And speak to your younger self, because that is ultimately who you know best. No one knows you or your story better than you, but there are people who will resonate with that story who have experienced similar things to you. No two people will have ever had the exact same circumstances in their life. That would make for boring human existence. But we can empathize with people who have had similar things that they have experienced. I know when I was growing up, my father passed away when I was 6 years old. And as morbid as it was, I had a group of friends and we called ourselves the Dead Dads Club, because we all had fathers who passed away at a young age. And it was the thing that linked us. And that was our commonality. I had another group of friends. All of our fathers were teachers. And, you know, when you start to explore those stories, who are you? That, and my, those two different groups of friends did not overlap. So I had my friends who were bonded through a loss of a family figure. And I had friends where we bonded over similar vocational choices of a parent. Two drastic different social groups, but I was, you know, in the little Venn diagram, I was the commonality within those two circles. And so I spoke to that. And that's really what I encourage everyone to do, is speak to your younger self, because that is who is going to resonate with your message. And speak to what you, who you were, like I said, 5 to 10 years ago, what you already had as far as a skill set or a knowledge base or where you were in your life. And then what did you need to know to grow? What were the things that you have learned over the last 5 to 10 years that have aided you in getting to where you are now? That's probably the message that your ideal audience needs to hear, because you're speaking to yourself.
Right. And so I think it's important that the audience understands, like, when he's talking about, like, talking from your younger self, like, you might be a mechanic and none of your friends are mechanics, right? But the way that you're talking and how you got where you're at has a lot to do with what you're doing. And so that story, even if you are a mechanic, and it doesn't seem like storytelling would be a thing for mechanics, but it is. I have a client who makes soap for mechanics. And his first thing was, is like, well, we're going to give away a car. I'm like, that's great. That's fun. We're going to get a lot of engagement from that. But then after that, there's no connection because there's no car to give away. And so the first thing was, is like, why did you start making soaps for mechanics specifically? Right? Because it's a product. So there's a story behind it. Right? And so a lot of people forget that the brand is about that story. Right. So a logo is just a representation of a story that has to be told, because without it, there is no brand. So I just want, I love how you put it all together. And the Venn diagram is beautiful, because I was kind of one of those kids too. I was a latchkey kid with a very demanding father, and those weren't the same kids. Right? I was the one in the middle there. And that really led me to where I was as far as trying to create, being a problem solver, because I was left by myself to solve a lot of problems as a young child. So yeah, that's what I do for a living now. It took a long time to get there, but talking to my younger self, it makes it a lot easier for me to talk about problem solving, because that younger child is talking to me.
And you know the specifics of where you got to. And that's why I think it's really important for us to analyze what our story is and you know, what are those key mile markers along the way. And then the other thing is too, if some people are like, well, my life is boring. Well, first of all, it isn't. And we're going to dispel that myth later on, I'm sure. But if you are struggling with how you got here, and that's a problem that you're going to want to analyze, by the way. But the other solution, if you're trying to figure out who your ideal audience could be, who comes to you the most for advice, and what advice do you give? Because that is going to be your area of genius that other people recognize. See, a lot of times we try to do this area of genius that we think we have, and we're like, oh, I'm really good at this, but nobody cares about it. But somebody will come to you for this expertise, you know, Buzz, how do I get into marketing? Like, what, how do I develop a brand? Like, what is it, you know? And you're like, oh, well, you do this, 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 and this. And you're like, but my area of expertise is really over here. And you're like, yeah, no, that's good. But so really tell me more about this strategies of putting this together. And you're like, okay, but do this. And, you know, and eventually you just kind of have to accept that we have multiple areas of genius, but if there's this thing that people are constantly coming to you and asking for advice on, that is probably the product that you need to start offering. And get really specific on who those people are that are asking that question over and over again. What is the commonality of that? That's where you start getting those multiple Venn diagrams. And then you can really key in on it. And when I did this exercise, I found it really interesting because when I first started out being an executive coach for public speaking, I was focusing on my initial talent pool that had come to me. And that was, you know, white males in their 40s to 50s that were executives of oil and gas or construction companies, because that was the industry that I was working in. But what I found was that as I started to do more to promote myself and say, this is what I do and this is how I can help you get your message out there, a real interesting thing occurred. Not a lot of CEOs and executives outside of my initial sphere of influence came to talk to me. But who did come to talk to me was charity directors and female entrepreneurs with a very social conscious component to the business that they were developing. And they were usually between 30 and 50 and were earning themselves less than $50,000, but their organizations were usually seven figures or eight. So, you know, that 5 million to 10 million range.
Right.
Doing incredible good, wanting to do more and not knowing how.
Right.
And struggling getting their message out because they felt that their message didn't matter.
Right.
And what I found was what resonated the most with that target audience was me saying, you have a story and your story does matter. And they would kept saying, no, but I don't, you know, look at all these people who are struggling and I'm not. And I'm like, well, how did you get to this point?
Right.
To your point, right? That message matters. Why is this? You wouldn't dedicate your life to a charity.
Right.
If you didn't have a personal connection to this. And that's where I kind of honed in on my secret sauce of that thing you're afraid to say is what your ideal audience needs to hear, because that's where that resonance comes in.
Yes.
And I found as soon as I started having these charity directors say, you know, this is why this charity is important to me because I experienced this and I don't want other people to. So I worked with a charity for early pregnancy and early infancy child loss, because the charity director Adita herself had experienced multiple miscarriages and an infant loss in crib. And that obviously that's going to be very important to her, but she was really afraid to say that out loud because she had this image that she needed to be strong for these women who were experiencing the ultimate loss. And that for her to show weakness was somehow taking away from them. And really what it ended up doing was giving them a better connection with her because she actually understood. And they had for so long felt that nobody could really actually understand what they were going through. And then when you have one person stand up and say, this is what I experienced and this is how I know to help you,
mm-hmm.
then there's credibility there.
Yep.
And there is vulnerability there. And the people are naturally more inclined to go to her. And her charity exploded.
That's
like
awesome.
She just... The number of people who came out of the woodwork, you know, and it's, of course there would be, because apparently statistically, like 1 in 3 women will experience this in their lives, I think is what mm-hmm. Aditi had told me. I don't know that for fact. So we're going to have to fact check that, but I believe that's what Aditi told me. And that's staggering.
Yeah.
Right. So there are a lot of people who will need this support. And she became that beacon and that shining light, at least in my community. And
I love
she's
that.
Grown it.
I love that story. I have a similar story and in a different trajectory. So when I got out of this service, I started a recording studio in Anchorage, Alaska. And I had just got out of a divorce in the whole nine yards. And this was it. like I put all of my eggs in this one basket. I thought for sure I was going to be able to, I didn't have a business plan for sure, but I was passionate about the music industry and helping other musicians, because I had spent 15 years trying to be a rock star, just not quite tall enough, dark enough, or talented enough, obviously, to make it, right? And so I was like, well, I can help other people. That'd be great. I love music, and I was really good at it. Of course, surviving off of starving musicians is a horrible business plan, especially in Anchorage, Alaska. And so I pivoted really quickly to things that I had done before the service, which was in sales and marketing. And I was, and I love media production, so that's something that I did. And so it grew into this media production. This is the crazy thing. The media production house really wasn't all that profitable. It grew like double digit growth year over year for like 7 years. But the real growth was when people, I finally monetized the free advice in marketing that I didn't know anybody wanted, right? And I kept giving it, saying, well, if I give them this information, they'll you're going to use me to produce that marketing campaign, right? Well, then I turn around and they're, you know, they go somewhere else and whatnot. But then I found out that people would actually pay me for that. And I found out that I actually enjoyed that even more. And it wasn't for the big corporations that I'd worked for. It was for the business owners that I could talk directly to. The bottom line that I could actually affect with just a couple of conversations. And to your point, that changed how I told my story. That changed what stories I was willing to tell, right? Because before there was no place for them. But when you're talking into a passion and into something that comes from the heart, I think that that's where we have to get uncomfortable and be vulnerable and let people do that. It's one of the reasons I have this show now, because it gives me this platform to share 17 years of my last 17 years of my entrepreneurial experience and help people avoid a lot of the mistakes I had. So I love that. Another mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make, and I see it, they suffer from this humble notion, I guess, that talking about their business is somehow bad, or talking about how they can help people too much is arrogant. You've written a book that talks about this very subject, right?
Yeah. No, when I wrote The Power to Speak Naked, the title actually comes from telling the raw naked truth, right? Being vulnerable enough to speak what you know from the heart. And as we've alluded to in the rest of the conversation, people want to know why they should trust you over somebody else, you know, and like I'm living in a city right now that has over 10,000 realtors. So why would I trust realtor A to sell my house over realtor B? It comes down to personal connection. One of my really good friends, because everybody has a friend who's a realtor, and I probably have 20, but one
only
of them,
20? What?
Only 20. I know. Well, there's only 10,000 in the city. I can't get greedy. We need to spread the realtor friendship around. But I have a lot of Cutco knives.
Okay, there you go. I love it.
And I haven't ever paid for Cutco in my life.
Giftology at its best.
Exactly. But I, my one friend went through a divorce. She didn't think she was ever going to get divorced. Her divorce absolutely crushed her. But then she realized that through the course of her divorce, not only did she have to sell her house, but then her husband, ex-husband, had to buy a house and she had to buy a house. That's three transactions. And she went, wait a second, I could probably specialize this. So she started specifically targeting newly divorced couples or couples who are separating, mm-hmm. From a point of, I understand, I've been there, and I want to make this process the easiest part of your divorce. Love the it. Easiest part of your divorce should be the financial transaction, and your largest financial transaction is going to be your housing situation. And she got real specific about it. And she started talking about, you know, this is what happened when me and my husband separated. You know, the heart, we fought over who got the dog, but separating the house was easy.
Right.
And that became kind of her messaging. And when she wasn't talking about that, she was doing okay,
right,
in realty, you know, definitely was fell prey to the ups and downs that Realty has. So when it was a down market, she wasn't doing very good. When it was an up market, it was easy to sell.
But everybody's getting a divorce. Like half the people are in a divorce right now.
But that's exactly it. She's like 50% of marriages are going to fail. So it doesn't matter what the economic climate is, whether we're in a down market or an up market, people are going to want to sell and they need to trust somebody to do that, particularly in a down market. So that's how she started to really separate herself from the crowd, was saying the thing that she was afraid to say, because that was the other thing. She had been drummed into her that as a realtor, she needed to be perfect, right? She had to have the newest, fanciest, leased car, which I think is so stupid.
Stupid,
by the way.
No.
Right? That she needed to have the white picket fence. She needed to have the perfect, everything needed to be perfect. So admitting a flaw was very likely the hardest thing she could ever do. And she turned around and went like, no, this is who I am. And all of a sudden, everybody started buying from her. And
everybody who counted started buying.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody who was going to be an ideal client for her.
Right. Exactly. And the fact is that this half of the people that each of those people that just got divorced that she helped through that they know that are married are going to get a divorce. So between those two people, there's all these other referrals that are going to come from that. And I think that comes even further. Let's take that another step further, is that people, entrepreneurs fall into this trap all the time. They try to please all the people all the time. And if there's one thing that I would like the audience to take away from the conversations thus far, is the fact that you niching down to who you are passionate about working with will be the most profitable, both in money and emotional bank accounts. That decision will be the most profitable in both bank accounts you'll ever make in your business, ever. It took me a long time for me to figure out who I didn't serve. And guess what? Realtors are one of the ones I don't serve. Because fair enough, they want to be everything to everybody. And it's very rare to hear a story like the one you just told in that space. And I would be, if I went into that space, one, there's a bunch of people telling her the opposite, right? All the way through. She had to work through all of that noise to find out what was actually just right inside of her the whole time. And I think that entrepreneurs, we listen to a lot because we're studying, right? My wife's starting a consultancy business here pretty soon. And she's reading like 7 books. She's a researcher. So she's reading 7 books. I'm like, just read Profit First by Mike Michalowicz, E-Myth, and a couple other ones. And she's a speaker, so I guess Speaking Naked will be another one that she has to read, right?
Power to Speak Naked. It's number one bestseller. She's got to get that on the list.
Exactly. And the whole point is that she's not going to go sell to a bunch of everybody. She knows where she belongs. She's in education. She's in history. So she knows who her audience is. But a realtor, there's a house on every block. So it's like, which houses do I want to sell? Or do I want to sell houses? Do I want to lease houses? And so I think your story is beautiful for this subject because of the fact that you've shown how profitable somebody can be when they get rid of all the other noise, all the people that won't make them money. So we're going to run out of time. And before we do, I want to make sure that we have something that people can utilize from this conversation. So we know how important telling our story is to our business. So what action steps should we be taking to best execute storytelling in our marketing?
Well, again, to Les Brown's point, you never make a point without a story and you never tell a story without a point. And so when I say that, everybody's like, well, what's the story? And that's so what I want everyone who's listening to this right now, if you need to hit pause so that you can grab a piece of paper and a pen. And when you come back, we're going to do an exercise. The initial exercise will take no more than 5 minutes, really shouldn't take more than 2 minutes. It's the exploration afterwards that you're going to need to do after you're done listening to the Buzzworthy podcast. And the first thing you want to do is we're going to do some simple math. I want you to take your age, however old you are, and round up or down to the nearest 5. So for me, I am 43. I'm going to round up to 45. That's your first step. Round up or down to the nearest 5. Next step, take whatever that number is and divide by 5. That's going to give you 5 even increments or time periods in your life, epochs, if you will. So I want you to look at each one of those. For me, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to take 45 divided by 5. I now get 5 even time periods of 9 years. So if I look back to my first 9 years of my life, 0 to 9, I now have to ask myself this question, and I'm going to ask it for every one of the time periods. If I think back to me in my first time period, what is the most significant or impactful memory that I have? What is the thing that, when I think back to that age, is the first thing that springs to my mind? For me, I have two very distinct memories from that time period, both of them when I was 6 years old. The first one is Christmas of 1985, and it was the first time I was ever on stage and received laughter from an audience, and then a standing ovation to follow it. The sound and the feeling that comes with it, I can go back to it instantly. And that's one of the things that's really important to remember about this memory. It may not be like this vivid, detailed thing. It could be a feeling. It could be a sound. It could be a taste or a smell. It could be a vivid memory, or it could be this kind of hazy, ethereal thing. But it's definitely the one thing that, when you think to that time period, comes to mind instantaneously. So ask yourself, what is the thing? Write it down. And then do that for every other time period. So again, for me, the first two really distinct memories that I have are very linked and have directed my life ever since. The first one is the sound of applause and laughter. That is a sound that I have been chasing my entire life. And every one of my decisions is usually centered around, will I get applause and a standing ovation? The next memory that I have is literally almost 2 months to the day later. And it is the sound that my mother made when a police officer and our family physician came to our back door to tell her that my father was never coming home. And she made this guttural, animalistic noise that just shook the neighborhood. Like, it was haunting, and I never want to hear it again. And subsequently, I have made most of my decisions in my life, my big decisions, avoiding that sound. How do I avoid the decisions that will lead to circumstances that would create that noise? I am always trying to avoid it. And so between the two, those were my setups. And then you ask yourself, for each one of those time periods, what is this significant memory? Write it down. That should give you at least 5 stories that are significant to your development in your life, because they're important to you for a reason. And this is where the homework comes. Once you're done listening to the podcast, I want you to look at those 5 memories. Ask yourself 2 questions. First, why is that important to you? What is the significance of that memory to you? Be specific to you, not your audience, not what you think they want to hear, to you. Why is it important to you? Then ask yourself, what are the lessons you learned before and after those events that led to those events? What was the impact of that event on your life? What are the lessons that you can learn? What are the lessons you see now in hindsight? What do you wish you had known going leading into those events? Those are going to be the points behind the stories you tell, because depending on your audience, the point may be different, but the stories that are important and significant to you will always be the same. How you tell it will change. And then if you need to know more on how to tell that story really impactfully, pick up a copy of the book, The Power to Speak Naked, and we'll explore that a little bit more with you.
If you do nothing else today, do that exercise. Find your perfect audience and then speak to it. Grab the book. There's links in the show notes. And as always, if you found value in this conversation, please follow You Are Buzzworthy and give us a review. Until next time, remember, you are buzzworthy.